Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Houses whisper past on the street beside her, the sun setting over their rooftops, their shadows long in the last hour of twilight. Her surface, smooth and specular, reflects the fading light. Her fingers, bent at their hinges, grip the upper rim of the wheel. The name tag pinned to her polo shirt reads, "Aaron, ask me anything."
That's Scott Guild reading from his debut novel, Plastic. Scott has created something fascinating here. His book is filled with surrealism and dark comedy that makes real people out of plastic characters. They are truly complicated and three-dimensional, and the reader can really identify with them. I know I sure did. The main character is Aaron James. Aaron and everyone else in Scott's plastic world have to deal with the very same problems and issues that we do. Scott joins us now to talk about the novel, how it has its own soundtrack, and why it took him a decade to write it.
I was in Boston at the time of the marathon bombing, and I was actually a dog walker at the time, applying to MFA programs. And so I was in the midst of feeling like I want to start a new project. And I was in a job where I would be going outside all the time, and I would be going through the city all the time. And all of a sudden, the entire city shut down, and huge tanks were rolling through the streets, and police were everywhere. And I lived just a few blocks away in Somerville from where the bombers lived. And so I just remember suddenly being trapped inside and feeling the world was kind of collapsing around me. And it was also a moment in my life where I was in a lot of transition and very lonely. So I do think of emotionally in a way that was a genesis moment for the novel, where I felt kind of the loneliness of my personal life and also the chaos around me inspiring what would then be the energy or vibes of Plastic, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, total sense. But my understanding, though, is that when you first started writing it, it wasn't called Plastic and there were no plastic figurines in the novel. Is that correct?
Yeah, at the beginning, it was not a novel about plastic figurines. It was just a main character set in a near future world where some of the current crises we're facing have escalated a little bit. The climate crisis, the response to that through eco-terrorism and things of that nature. And it was only many years later, about I think it was around 2018, after I'd taken several years off from the book, that I had the thought of, what if all these characters were plastic figurines? And at that point, the world of the book started to feel much more vivid and alive than it had in the past. Once the plastic figurines came in, suddenly I could get into all that zany invention inside the world, and the book started to feel like my own in a way that it hadn't before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said that you could read a lot of different meanings into why they're plastic figurines.
Yes, can
you give us an example or two? I find that very intriguing.
I love the idea of readers encountering that world and it feeling very flexible in meaning to them, but probably more flexible than the bodies of the figurines. You know? But I do think there's something there about, let's say, alienation from nature, people being alienated from their bodies. I think the stiffness of it, for me, always felt connected to trauma in some ways. So I think the fact that they're all plastic figurines, in my mind, is really connected to Aaron's emotional journey and what she goes through. The moment in the book when we really see her experiencing herself as a figurine, I would say, I don't want to give too many spoilers, is very connected to the moments in her life when she's losing people she loves and the trauma in her life increasing too. So I think there's connections to be made there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious to know how you reacted when you learned about the live action movie Barbie. Did you see that as a good thing for plastic or a bad thing?
My book is also deeply rooted in apocalyptic themes, and nuclear bombs feature in it a lot. So for me, it was the whole Barbenheimer moment. It felt like it was kind of the culture saying to me, like, thematically, you are with us, Scott. You know, I was like, I'd written this odd novel and it was strange. And I wondered if people were going to be able to jump into the imaginative world and feel that it was accessible. And to suddenly have plastic figurine worlds become the exact center of the culture at the moment that I was finishing my book was exciting, I think, because it meant that when people picked up my book, it wasn't going to be an alienating imaginative world for them that they could probably slip right inside. And that seems to have been the case.
Yeah, very well said. Can you tell us about your protagonist, Aaron James?
Well, Aaron is a person very close to my heart, I would say. She's a lonely woman who's experienced a lot of grief and trauma. And she's currently at a moment at the start of the book when she does have some people in her life and some sort of found family connections, but she's also quite alone and is looking for where her life is going to be going and what her life is going to mean. And it very much mirrored where I felt that I was in my life. When I first started writing the book, I was at a transition moment in my life too. And I think, as I said before, I was experiencing a lot of loneliness and isolation and things like that. Erin's journey into finding love and finding hope, despite all the complications of her past and the things she's been through before, was something that really resonated with me. And I think that's why I probably spent 10 years writing the book in some ways. I never wanted to say goodbye to Erin.
The plastic world that Erin lives in has a lot in common with our current world. Can you tell us about some of the similarities?
There are similarities, yes. The plastic world that I'm writing about is sort of between somewhere between the 2070s and 2090s at the different points that we see it in the narrative, and even a little bit earlier at times. But it is facing the climate crisis in very extreme ways. It's its own peculiar plastic form of the climate crisis, but it is facing, you know, ecological destruction. And it's at a point too where, because things have advanced so far with the climate crisis in their world and there's been so little political action on it, there is a huge violent political movement against it, and people have sort of are leaning on violence as the only really effective form of political speech for people who are motivated to do something about the climate crisis in this world. It's a very violent and frightening world there, but violence is also representing the very best of causes. So there's a lot of fracture in families and fracture between friends and communities over the best way to approach the climate crisis. In the plastic world, it's a world that's also completely commodified and owned by corporations and technologized in lots of ways. And I didn't want the satire to be too on the nose with that, because I think the technologies in the world do allow for a lot of emotional connections between people, and there is meaning to be found there. So it's not just me thumbing my nose at the entire technological moment, but it is a space where technology is running people's lives, and in part because nature is falling apart. So they are more and more retreating into virtual reality as a happier, safer, less complicated space than the natural world.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to Erin for a second. She spends mm-hmm. a lot of her time watching her favorite TV show, the surrealist retro sitcom Nuclear Family. Can you tell us a bit about Nuclear Family?
Yeah, Nuclear Family is a sitcom that Erin loves and watches a lot with her sister Fiona, and it's set in the past. It's set about a year after the nuclear war that afflicted the plastic figurines in, I think, like the 2040s, 2050s. And this war, in many ways, is what defined her father's life and what gave shape to the journey her father goes on. Her father is a person who rarely speaks about the past, however, and Erin has lots of questions about her past that never get answered, particularly because her father dies when she's relatively young. So this sitcom is a way for her to connect to the past of her world that she doesn't really understand, to emotions about her father. It's deeply important to her. The version of Nuclear Family that we see in the book is very much almost like a fan fiction, or what's called in the book a fam fiction, where Erin has sort of spliced the original show with the fragments of information she knows about her father, so that what we're actually watching in the book is a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very well done. I found the references to Brad Pitt disease very intriguing. What is Brad Pitt disease, and is it something that we should warn Brad about?
No, I think Brad will be okay. Brad Pitt disease was one of the very first things I had for the book, even before they were plastic figurines. In 2013, I remember coming into the first workshop with Brad Pitt disease. Again, not sure how anyone would respond to that. And so many things about the book changed throughout the years, but Brad Pitt disease was always safe, you know, because it would always get a good response. Brad Pitt disease is a disease where the plastic figurines slowly turn to ash. So their plastic starts to transform into ash, and they almost start to not melt exactly, but more like crumble. Yeah, so that this is how Erin's father passed away. And so it's introduced earlier in the book as kind of a funny thing, but then you see Erin going through hospice, home hospice care with her father while he's suffering from Brad Pitt disease. And it's more of a queasy moment where he has this kind of goofy name for his disease, but there's a great deal of suffering and sadness obviously connected to it.
One of my favorite supporting characters in the plastic verse is Morris. Can you tell us a bit about him?
So Morris is a singing, dancing crucifix who features in the television show Nuclear Family. And when the main character in the show, Max, is having a bit of a crisis or trouble, he he walks over to the crucifix and Morris leaps off and bursts into a musical number singing about a solution to Max's problem. And normally the solution is the most ill-advised and disastrous one possible. And the episodes are normally based around Max's misadventures with Morris based on the terrible advice he's received. And Morris looks exactly like a crucifix, but he speaks in a much huskier, older, kind of grumpy voice, sort of like Burgess Meredith in Rocky or something like that. So like, hey, kid, you know, I'm going to help you out. And then, you know, and Max always has to take the nails out of Morris's palms and feet before he was like, take my nails out, kid. I'll tell you about what to do. So, yeah, Morris was a lot of fun to write. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as if this great novel isn't enough, you've created Plastic, the album. How did that come about?
It was honestly this great process of working with my editor, Anna Kaufman at Pantheon. It was perhaps a year into working with her or something like that. So late in the editorial process, one day I was in a scene and the characters just started bursting into song and a musical number started unfolding. And I was like, well, that's really interesting. I could write lyrics in the book and the characters could be singing and it was a musical. But I was a bit trepidatious about it because normally when you're finishing up editing a book, you don't then go to your publisher and say, hey, could I transform this entire book into a musical? So it seemed like a bit of an extreme idea. But I wrote a couple scenes around this and I sent it to Anna and she was quite into it. She really enjoyed it. And she said, this is great. Let's play around with this. So then I wrote a lot of musical numbers throughout the book. And we actually had to pare that back a little bit. There were too many. But I had realized, you know, that I had sort of created an album inside the book. There was an album's worth of songs happening because the book had this musical focus now. So once the book was done, I then reached out to Cinder Talk, Johnny Roger, who he performs at Cinder Talk, but his name is Johnny Rogers, and asked him about the possibility of working together on making this album. And he was also really excited about the idea. So then we spent about a year crafting the songs and producing them. And he is an absolute genius and also knew the singer Stranger Cat, Cat Martino, who then became Aaron on the album and plays Aaron on the album and singing all the songs. So that was a really exciting process and connected to my past of working as a musician in a way that felt very full circle for my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about the song Boy Toy?
So Boy Toy is a song that Aaron is singing right in chapter one. And it's almost like an introduction to where she's at in her life at that moment. She's singing about her loneliness and how distant she feels from other people. And the occasion for her singing it is also at that moment, she's invited over what's called a hot date in the plastic world. And a hot date is almost like a Tinder date with absolutely no effort. It's like if you could order up a person through Uber Eats or something like that to come over and have dinner with you. And, you know, it might get sexual, it might not, but it's like you're bringing in a companion for the evening because you feel so lonely. And that's not really stigmatized in the plastic world very much.
With all I've grieved, I can't believe I'd bring up Brad Pitt disease on a hot date. Nights, I'm on my own. Watch my shows, I scroll my phone.
It is not ultimately where she wants to be romantically with someone, but because she's experienced so much loss and feeling so lonely, in chapter one, she has a hot date coming over to her house, and the meal does not go well because she brings up Brad Pitt disease, her father's death, during the meal, and gets triggered and goes off to her bedroom. And we see also in chapter one that Aaron usually goes into song because it's kind of this dissociative state for her. She's sort of leaving the world she's in behind and bursting into a musical number. So Boy Toy was one of the first songs written for the album and takes Aaron into that emotional musical place. And on that one, I also collaborated with the artist Gainsayer, Levi Cecil, who's really amazing, an amazing musician and songwriter too.
Yeah, I think that Plastic would be a fantastic stop motion animated feature film. Maybe you could out Barbie the Barbie movie. And you've already got the soundtrack. What do you think?
I love that. And also, you know, the book is written as if it's a TV show. It's written from such a visual perspective because that's where Aaron has dissociated to in her life, where she's experiencing all the world as visual media. She's seeing herself on a screen all the time and the way she thinks about her life. So I do, you know, to ultimately create a version of Plastic that was on a screen would feel like a culmination in some way. So I'd be really excited for all the creative possibilities there.
Yeah. There are plenty of them. Yeah. Scott Guild, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Plastic. I can't wait to read your next book. No pressure, though. And I am looking forward to Plastic, the movie.
Well, thank you so much, Doug. This has been such a delight. And again, you're such an excellent reader and have done so much wonderful research into all the different aspects of the project. So it's been so much fun to talk with you about this.
Scott Guild is an author and musician. He's the creator of the multimedia novel Plastic. Find out more about Scott and Plastic at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Zach Woods, Steph Tolev, and Scott Guild.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
His face looks like the physical manifestation of the word touche.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
No, it's a team effort. I'm merely the big daddy.
And thanks to you, our alphas.
May I remind you all that this is public radio.
More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
What is it about my public radio colleague that you find so appealing?
But all I see is draining me on my plastic fantastic.